The video shows Robbie Stratton running through a convenience store with an alligator in his hands. He takes the animal in the beer fridge as well.
I don't even remember coming up here.
We asked Stratton where the alligator came from.
No clue. No clue. This store sells some good liquor. And I drank a lot of it that night. They told me what I did was stupid, and I'll be facing some charges here soon. And probably go to jail, probably not. We'll see.
TBTL.
Cheetos, I get crazy.
I just love hot Cheetos. I love them so much.
Ooh, daddy's gonna dish out some daddy discipline. As a fellow daddy, I approve.
Stop saying daddy.
You got it, Papa Bear.
I'm not handling this well. I don't feel competent. I'm depressed.
We're the number one show in hospitals and on sinking riverboat casinos.
This is not your mama's podcast. This is Too Beautiful to Live.
All right, here we go, everybody. Hello, good morning, and welcome to a Tuesday edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Just study it out, and you'll see.
My name is Luke Burbank. I am your host.
This is a serious message to everybody watching my update right now.
We are coming to you, per usual, from the Burbank Springs Broadcast Center, perched atop Alabama Hill, in Bellingham, Washington, the Bay City. Fall has arrived a little early here in the Northwest, it would appear. It's rainy, wet, cloudy, which is unfortunate because the way things tend to work in this part of the world, for those of you who are living elsewhere or are unfamiliar for some reason, is that usually it takes a while for the summer to get going in the Northwest, but once it gets going, then it sticks around through September. Anybody who played a fall outdoor sport in the Northwest can relate to just sweating and the scorching September heat. This year seems to be different. I don't know what's happening, but it's almost like the climate of the planet is changing in some way or another. But I mean, I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I'm just a humble podcaster bringing you episode 2,985 in the Collector's Series. Oh, God, that number just grows ever closer to 3,000, doesn't it? I guess that's how counting works. This is how this episode is going to work. First, we're going to
let the fun begin
by telling you about the topics we plan to discuss today. There is a new Monopoly game that is being released called Ms. Monopoly.
I think we can all agree that it's a great time to be a lady in America.
One of the elements of this game is that female players will get more money when they pass Go. The goal, I guess, being to try to even out years and generations and centuries of inequality. It is a it's a good message that is being presented in the most shamelessly commercial way, in my opinion. So we'll, I don't know. What we really need is two white guys weighing in on this issue. And that is exactly what you're going to get, my friends, coming up during Top Stories. Also, a guy who is a basketball player for the Philadelphia 76ers went to an NFL game this weekend and ended up getting jumped by a group of fans of the same city's football team. This was internecine battling between Philadelphia Eagles fans and someone who plays for their very own basketball team.
You assholes! You're trying to fight a guy who's playing for the Philadelphia 76ers.
One of these stories that I have to say could only happen in Philadelphia. As a person who feels a strong connection to that city, this was extremely on brand for Philly. So we'll talk about that, plus emails and V-mails. And we'll say hello to this guy, the longest running Cobra of the show, known for his drawings of tall ships. He's not one of those college types who's going to talk your ear off. I consider him to sort of be the Barp Simpson of podcasting. He is Andrew Welsh, and he's joining me right now from the Roosevelt neighborhood, Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my friend.
Let's do the Barp Man.
Hey, eat my blorps.
By the way, thank you for teaching me a new word already, moments into the show.
Internecine.
Internecine. Destructive to both sides in a conflict. I feel like maybe you've taught me that word before, but the beauty of being simple like me is you can just get the glow of learning things over and over and over again because they just slipping out.
I paused. I accept your compliment, and I appreciate it, but it may have been misapplied in this case because I paused before I said that because I think I wanted to say intra-Nicene, and I always mix up intra and inter. So intra-Nicene would be people within the same, let's just say, army fighting each other or family or group.
Well,
and that's why
secondary definition here on inter-Nicene, exactly how you said it, relating to conflict within a group or organization.
Inter-Nicene.
Oh, good. So that's also inter-Nicene.
Yes. Which isn't very nice. When you're not nicing to your neighbors, you're inter-nicing.
Right. No more Mr. Nicing. Our house band at LiveWire actually played that song, the Alice Cooper song, before the show on Friday night that we did in Seattle. And it was like, I love our house band because they just pull these random songs out. In no universe would I ever be like, you know what I want to hear this week? Alice Cooper, No More Mr. Nice Guy. But they played it. It was such a club banger. I was loving it.
I either didn't know or had completely forgotten that that is Alice Cooper.
That's exactly what we were talking about side stage. Everyone was like, this is Alice Cooper?
I know one song by... Here's what I always think of as Alice Cooper. I grew up thinking like, well, you don't listen to him. He's evil music.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Mascara.
Yeah, exactly. And then you grow up and then you every now and then someone's like, yeah, that's an Alice Cooper song. And you're like, what? That's just fun pop music. There's another song that our friend Durs put on a mixtape for me. Hello, I'm Here or something. I'm ruining that, and Stewbot's head is exploding right now as he listens. But they're all
noted Cooper head.
I'm sure.
Stewbot.
I mean, would you doubt it?
Cooper enthusiast,
right? Change your Twitter handle, Stewbot. But they're all just the again. It's only the few that I know. The very very tip of the iceberg of his discography. But all the songs, I'm like, oh, this is just nice. Oh, Alice Cooper was just nice.
Well, that's the thing. I think you and I grew up with similar – we talked about this a lot yesterday, so I don't need to rehash that. But I think we both grew up in kind of strict families in different ways. And I know that I was – when things read overtly as like satanic or scary, like Alice Cooper with a boa constrictor around his neck and mascara running down his face, even though now as an adult I would look at that and I would think that's the least tough thing you can do. Like – that's sending out all the signals of toughness and of pushing the envelope. But of course, that's usually what people who are not doing that are doing. But as a kid, it worked perfectly. It had exactly the desired effect. I was like, that guy's terrifying. Meanwhile, he's like, loves golfing, has been married to his wife, I believe, for like 40 or 50 years. Is from, if I am not wrong, isn't he a Clevelander?
Oh, I feel like I would know that, but I also, you know, I'm not really... I don't have a great track record on knowing things today, so let me look.
Could you be my fact-checking cuz on that?
Yeah, I am working on it now, yeah.
So it's
Detroit,
like Alice Cooper.
Detroit, that makes
Detroit.
More sense. Yeah, that actually
okay,
rings
yeah.
a bell, yeah.
But just like it's funny because I think that – and of course, you know, he shows up in the Wayne's World movies and was just being very, you know, nice and approachable. By all accounts, Alice Cooper offstage is the opposite of what I thought Alice Cooper was on stage as a kid. So it's not, I guess that's surprising to me that his music is very accessible.
And the whole, you know, the whole, I don't know if it's an urban legend or whatever, but I just referenced the biting bats thing. That wasn't even him. That was Ozzy Osbourne, of course, famously, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. Which, did that even really happen?
I don't know. I mean, it's I'm possible. Looking it up now. Let's not, you know, you play in the mud, you get dirty. Let's not go there.
Yeah. We don't want to create a bat lash. My hand partially muted the bell, and I think that was an appropriate response for that joke. It didn't deserve.
You're
let
like
me tell you the
one
response.
Of those porn players.
I'm going to do that again. I'm now crunched down, hunched down over my console here. I mean, we're trying to avoid some kind of bat lash.
Yeah. See, all the jazz is getting to you. You're like a drummer, kind of like muting your cymbals a little bit, or a trumpet player with one of those plungers.
Yeah, put a little mute on my horn there. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Hey, speaking of LiveWire, was, of course, last week, Friday night. We did it in Seattle. That was great. This week, I'm very excited about this. I don't know if anyone's going to be coming to the show in Portland, if any of people listening to me right now. I mean, I know a few are, but like, if you're in the Northwest and you're not doing anything on Thursday night, come to the Alberta Rose Theater, where we have, as one of our guests, and this is just one of our many awesome guests, a guy named Reese Darby, who you may know as Murray from Flight of the Conchords.
In addition to the good news and the terrible news, there's also some truly awful news.
Although this news is great. The news is that Reese Darby is going to be at Livewire, and it's going to be all I can do to not just ask him to do lines from Flight of the Conchords.
What else does he do aside from Flight of the Conchords? I mean, that's been a while now, right?
He does stand-up. Which I think he's going to actually do stand up for us.
Oh, nice.
He's been in a lot of movies. He was in the Wilder People movie. He's good friends. He's in the TV version of What We Do in the Shadows, which is sort of like a vampire mockumentary type movie. He's pretty tight with I always mess this guy's name up, but I want to say it's like Taika Waititi, who made Eagle versus Shark and one of those Avengers, one of those Thor Ragnarok. I think he directed Thor Ragnarok. And so he's like, Reese does a lot of stuff with that director. So anyway, he just does a bunch of things. I believe he's going to do stand up and then we're going to also interview him, and it's, you know, it is going to be hard for me, not even on stage, but in the green room, to not just be like, hey, could you say, you know, I tend to grab, I don't want to, I'm sorry. I don't want to do the accent. This is going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to want to make him say lines from Flight of the Conchords, mm-hmm. which is probably like the bane of his existence.
Right. Yeah. Or you could just like treat him like he is the actual character that he plays in Flight of the Conchords. That's the other route you could take. That would be also probably just as damaging. Just keep on asking him questions in character.
Well, this is the thing. Okay. I don't want to be negative about my colleagues at Livewire who are doing an amazing job.
Now you have my attention.
But you're glad that for once I'm besmirching a different set of coworkers than the APM people, and specifically you.
No, it's not even that. It's just when you set up a sentence like that, everybody is sticking around for the second half of that sentence.
Well, they do all this sort of publicity for our shows, and Reese Darby, Murray from Flight of the Conchords, is a big, sort of a big get for us. And all the pictures they're using of him, it turns out he's actually a very handsome man. And they're using all these promo pics where he's handsome and looks nothing like mm-hmm. Murray. And when I first saw it, I wanted to say to whoever does that, I don't actually know whose job it is, I wanted to say, do not use the most attractive picture of Reese Darby that you can find, which doesn't tell people that it's Murray from Flight of the Conchords. Use a picture of Murray.
I got to say, yeah, I am looking. I just looked him up. I would not.
Wow. Barp.
Barp.
Power barp.
Power barp. He is actually a very handsome man. Also, mustaches. I see a couple of him in a mustache here. One thing that one takeaway from football weekend this past weekend was, if there's any doubt that the mustache is back,
oof,
it is now gone. The mustache is in full effect on a lot of handsome men.
I don't get it. I think Aaron Rodgers' stash, I believe he shaved it. I don't think he did have it, or it wasn't as ridiculous in the game. But all of the kind of like ancillary photography assets they had of him, it was going all the way down. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like it was I guess you would call it a handlebar mustache.
Yeah, in the promo shots. On the field, he just kind of, I don't know if he shaved that or let everything grow out around it, but he basically just like, he was just neckbeard guy again. Like he just had
It was not nearly as pronounced. I think that handlebar mustache is a really silly look. I mean, go nuts. Go off, king. But really, like, also, I can't grow one, so that's part of, I was thinking, it's so weird how random thoughts just pop in and out of one's head. I don't know why I thought of this yesterday, but we did, you know, years ago on this show, because of Movember or something, I decided to not shave for a month, And the results were so paltry, so sad, that I had to put Just for Men, like I had to put Just for Men hair dye on my sad upper lip mustache hair to even make it look, to even raise it to the level of an embarrassing, limp, sad mustache. But I remember Vanessa used to call me La Leyenda de Bigote Burbo, the legend. The legend of mustache burbs.
Did she ever make you wear
de Bigote Burbo?
Did she put a cowboy hat on you and have you come in on a horse just to see how it looked?
Yeah, I was actually the original. I was the thing they based that cowboy emoji on. It was me.
Oh, no kidding. Luke, I use that all the time. Do you get any residuals or anything?
I do not. I signed a very bad contract over that. I could not have known how big emojis were going to be. And that's one of my major career regrets, was not getting points on the back end of my cowboy emoji. But
oh my God.
So anyway, I'm very excited that Rhys Darby is going to be at the show. And if you do want to come and hang out, maybe what I can do is get the listeners to ask Rhys Darby to do Murray things in case that's considered date class A.
Just say, will you do Murray things? Hey, man, do you do Murray things? You could ask him. I wonder if he is protected from a lot of fans coming up and saying catchphrases and trying to get him to say
because they don't recognize
him. Because they don't recognize him. Yeah, that might be kind of like a self-defense mechanism.
Yeah, it's nature's self-defense mechanism
The
very funny New Zealander, of the very funny Kiwi. So if you want to get tickets to that, you can go to livewireradio.org. I guess we should take a break. It's that time already in the morning. Boy, it's just flying by today. So let's do that. Take a break, come back, do some top stories and the like. Stay with us. This is TBTL.
Scatman's World.
Hello! Hooray! Let the show begin. I've been ready. Hello! Hooray! Let the lights grow dim. I've been ready.
I know that I say this a lot on this show, but if not the best, one of the best mixtapes I ever got from our friend Durst.
Man.
And it opened with this song, Hello Hooray,
wow,
by Alice Cooper.
That's great. I've never heard this song before, but this is good.
It is, right? And this is like the first track off of the 73 record. And I, for years now, ever since Andy gave me that mixtape, I've been meaning to go back and listen to the rest of this. Part of me is worried, though, that it's kind of like I wonder if this is one of those artists where it's best if it is just kind of handpicked for me, because if I go in too deep, I'll be disappointed. And right now, I'm just feeling very, very bullish on Alice Cooper.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that being the case. Other than what School's Out.
Oh, yeah.
And whatever the song was we started the show talking about, which I now can't even remember.
Yeah, I was going to say Working for the Weekend, but No More Mr. Mm-hmm. Nice Guy.
Yep.
No More Mr. Nice Guy.
And then didn't he do, there was another one that, wait, was Ballroom Blitz, who did Ballroom Blitz originally?
I want to say
in the Wayne's World movie, but is that an Alice Cooper?
No, that is.
Is that an Anderson Cooper?
It's by a band called Sweet.
Wow.
Ballroom Blitz, yeah.
Hmm, okay. No, this is a good song. Durs has very good and wide ranging musical taste for
yes,
growing
he definitely
up in
does.
Redmond, Bellevue area.
Yeah, well, that's part of that independent radio spirit that's out there in Wazoo, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't they have a good radio station out there?
They actually do. It's named for Edward R. Murrow, who went there. It's a great broadcasting school. Yeah, the Murrow School. That's the premier journalism communication program in the state, certainly of any public university. I went to the University of Washington, where the they canceled the broadcast journalism major the year I got there. They were like, yeah. It was like they were basically having a party, but they didn't want me to come to it. So they were like, turn off the lights. Everybody get down. Let's pretend that we've canceled the broadcast journalism major because Bigote Burbo is here.
There's something about this guy we just don't trust.
Yeah, we don't like this guy. I know that I talked about this back when it was happening, but and I know that me bringing it up again makes it sound like it's – I mean, the only thing I can take away from is it must be a thing in my mind, even though I would claim that it's not. But I get these emails from the University of Washington, like journalism department or communications school, and it's, you know, usually asking for money or something. But what I always have – I have this thought now because remember Phyllis Fletcher, a.k.a. P. Fletch, tried really hard to help get me into the UW Communications School Hall of Fame.
I do remember like, that, yeah.
It was it, – because I think – I want to say our buddy Ross Reynolds is in there or is on the board. Maybe he's a member of the Hall of Fame or what, whatever the official name is. And there's all these like forms you have to fill out and stuff. And Phyllis just being – the kind-hearted, just unfailingly like supportive person she is, I believe even filled out a bunch of the paperwork for me. And I did not get in. And I was I have to admit, I was a little bit perplexed because it was like I don't think that my career in broadcasting has been Hall of Fame worthy were I not from a school that has almost no other notable graduates in terms of people that are like hosting radio shows or what have you. It's like if I'd gone to WSU and done their program, I'd be like, yeah, I can live three lifetimes before I get into their Hall of Fame because that's the school you go to in Washington if you want to do broadcast journalism.
What year do you think that was? 2017?
Maybe. And the that year, everybody who got in was like people that are doing like, you know, social media. I mean, part of it probably was part of it was that they just didn't want to have me in there, or they decided I wasn't up. I wasn't making the cut. But then it was also a lot of new media things, and somebody who, you know, in my mind, it seemed like they just had those kind of like jobs that sound like a thing on paper, in charge of synergistic strategies at, you know, at like Ringle.net, which is the new, you know, public awareness strategy firm. It's like, okay, all these things are words, except for Ringle.net. But it doesn't sound like a real job. Like, I think of the people that should be in the Broadcast Hall of Fame as people who are broadcasting.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out who got in that class.
Well, I'm looking at all the classes. So based on your description, I think I know the year you're talking about, but I'm not going to say it. I don't think it's as I don't think it's as bad as you think. If I have it right, the year before would have been really stiff competition for you. I don't think that you're classifying at all. There are a couple of the three that were in the year that I think you're talking about. I'll go with you maybe a third of the way on that. I mean,
there was nobody in the year that I got turned down. I didn't see anybody on that list who like even worked in journalism as I think of journalism. It was all like people that were doing new media stuff. Now, don't get me wrong. The internet is a very big part of journalism now and how people get information. So I'm not trying to say just because somebody worked for a web strategies firm that they're not reaching people. But I just kind of thought, I guess maybe I was putting more stock in the idea that like actually hosting a radio show and being on CBS television would move me to the top 12% of people who've graduated from that program that literally didn't even offer broadcast journalism as a major.
I'm not seeing anybody in the past 4 years who did new media stuff. There are some people who have worked for like organizations that have tried to advance lesser voices in journalism. So maybe that's what you're thinking of. But I'm not seeing a lot of like kind of like part of the Twitterati blah blah blah. You know, I'm seeing stuff of people. The people with the most kind of like nebulous kind of jobs, it looks like though they've worked for organizations that are trying to do good things in the world.
Oh, well, thanks. So I'm the asshole.
Cool. I'm just saying.
You stop barping all over my rep.
I did just barp all over it.
Luke, you're upset that you were beat out by people who are trying to bring marginalized voices into the space.
In fact, you know what? I'm going to start a Twitter beef with one of them right now, just on your behalf,
because
I feel bad for barping on your story. So you know what? Let me just pick a fight. Yeah, she looks ready to fight
problem,
with me online.
The inherent problem with the way this whole conversation unfolded is we can't name anyone on this list.
This is terrible
because then that makes them somehow a target of something that they had nothing to do with.
I know this isn't good. All right, what should we do? You want to thank some? I'm sorry, I need to do a reset. I am off today. I'm not being a good co-barp at all. what can I do to help here? Do you want me to play the fake
I'll tell you
music?
What always I'll tell you what always brightens up my day.
Okay.
This
you
sound.
Got you got it.
These listeners I'm about to name, they are in the Hall of Fame of my heart. There's a Hall of Fame party in my heart, and it features all of these donors of the day. Julie Kumasaka of Marysville, Washington is donating to the show. Thank you, Julie. Rena Lopez of McMinnville, Oregon.
McMinnville, man.
Hey, Rena. How's it going? Stephanie Lampe of Mountlake Terrace, Washington, also helping keep the show going. Thank you. Frank McCree of Charlestown, Massachusetts. Do you know anything from Charlestown, Massachusetts?
I don't know anything from Charlestown, Massachusetts, but in the spirit of trying to be yes and, I will say there's a place called Charlie's Diner in Massachusetts that I like, but that is more in the Boston area.
Hey, you know what, though, Andrew? I appreciate that you have really turned your attitude around during halftime.
I'm trying.
You're coming out ready for action in the second half.
That's right.
That's exactly – those are exactly the kinds of tenuous connections that we love to make on this show.
I had a four-letter match there.
People say, how do you do like an hour and a half a day, 5 days a week? I'm like, it's connections like – I don't know about Charlestown – but I have been to a place called Charlie's Diner, and then we do a tight 20 on that.
Yeah, right. They're the best jukebox in Boston so far as I can tell.
Did they really?
Although I guess it was technically Cambridge. But they had a great, great jukebox that I loved in the early 2000s. It's interesting, though, because I wonder if it's still there or if it's replaced by a jukebox in which you can play any song.
A touch tuner.
Yeah, a touch tuner. Which I love going into a bar and seeing that they have touch tunes. It's more fun for me in a certain way because I can just sit at the bar and I don't have to get up and flip through a bunch of CDs that, you know, may or may not ring my bell, as it were. But there is something about the day and age when you would walk into a place and be like, I know this place has a good jukebox. You even know like what you're going to. Oh, go to the replacements right away. They're near the back. That'll buy me some time, and then I'll go through the rest.
Yeah, there was the jukebox at the Tattletale was really bad, but then it changed my standards for what I would play. So, for instance. Mm-hmm. The song How Far Is Heaven by Los Lonely Boys. Mm-hmm. That was like one of the best songs. I probably wouldn't like in my normal life go way out of my way to find that song, but compared to everything else on that jukebox, it was like by far and away one of the best songs. There was an Al Green song on there too, Love and Happiness, that was good. And then like third place, and this just tells you how paltry the selection was, third place was Ba Wada Ba by Kid Rock.
Oh, yikes.
That was third place.
This is where I went to a bar. I'm blanking on the name of it right now. I used to talk about it a lot. It was in the Koreatown neighborhood of Los Angeles.
Oh, but, Hank and Frank's.
Hank and Frank's. You knew
Frank
the ones.
Hanks.
Frank and Hank's, I think it was, yeah. I think it's still around, but it's new ownership, and I don't think it still has the same kind of old-school pizzazz it used to. It was a tiny, tiny little dive bar, and I know that that's where I would always play the Mike and Mechanic song, Living Years, which Genevieve was not a huge fan of, but for me, it matched the tone of the bar well, and also they had like four CDs in there. What do you want me to do?
Yeah. That's a fair point. But man, that song is just so contemplative. Like, I feel like that song could drive most of the people. Like, I would not have that in the rotation.
Oh, really?
If I owned the bar, because if I'm sitting there at kind of like a dive bar in the Koreatown neighborhood of Los Angeles, and I've been really battling in my head with my relationship with alcohol, and in the Living Years by Mike and the Mechanics, by Mike plus the Mechanics comes on, that very well might be the thing that takes me right to some kind of 12-step meeting.
I believe it's Mike plus pharmacists. I knew you was laughing at that. Was,
you're
that,
having
that
was, a strong second half.
No, that was a joke.
You're like Deshaun Watson.
Right.
Dude, I have so
but
much.
Don't forget that
so
that
sad.
Song. It's very. Don't forget that that song builds up to like these.
Yes, say it loud. Say it clear.
I mean, it actually. I think that it starts off kind of. It is contemplative. You're not wrong about that. But I think it's a song of celebration. I mean, we're celebrating a life here. Not you know, not
we're celebrating getting our 7 day coin. but you know what else? You know what else for me about that music was? It's very much like worship music that I grew up with.
Oh.
The Say It Loud, Say It Clear. That is that the sound of it could have very much have been from like Maranatha Ministries or one of these outfits that put out worship music. We used to get a monthly tape of new cool worship music that we would rock out to hard in the Burbank household. Not from our church, from like a cool church that had people that could play their instruments. And that's, there's something. And then the other song that Mike and the Mechanics did, Silent Running, it was like a kind of like, it could be the soundtrack to the movie Red Dawn. It's kind of like a depressing, like, it's like a dad giving instructions to his family about how to like escape from the scary, you know, like Russians that have shown up or whatever. And so I think the combination, which was also that sort of vibe, was very much woven into my childhood. Mm-hmm. The combination of that song, Silent Running, and then In the Living Years having this kind of worshipful vibe to it. I don't know. It would put me, were I sitting in a dive bar hearing it, it would put me into a probably kind of a weird headspace.
Yeah, I liked that headspace. I don't know. But I can't.
Do you want to play it? Do you want to boot it up?
We still have some donors of the data thing. Yeah, let's do that. Living Years. Sorry about that. I was looking at the, what is that other song that you had mentioned? Because we, I feel like we've
Silent
done
Running.
Yeah. I was looking that up. I think I've heard it before.
With that, and the Silent Running, if you were to, if it was, if that song were to be named based on what you think it's called, it would be called Can You Hear Me? Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, yeah,
can you hear me running?
Oh,
that song is technically called Silent Running.
Okay, yeah, we've had this conversation before. Yeah, I like that one, too. Turns out I'm a big Mike and the Mechanics head and Alice Cooper. I'm learning so much about myself today.
All right. Let's thank our In the Living Years level donors, which is the back half of this list. And really the last two people. Amy Rubel of Tacoma, Washington. That's the sound of me leaning into the show sheet to make sure that it's Rubel and not Ruby. And it is, in fact, Rubel. Thanks, Amy. And then Daniel Sabro of Tumwater, Washington. Daniel, Amy, Frank, Stephanie, Rena, and Julie. I'd like to say it loud. I'd like to say it clear. We would not be doing the show if not for your donations today. So thank you so much.
And now is the part where we listen to about 2 minutes of this song until we get to the good part.
Absolutely.
See, it's already, you know, you're sitting at the bar. Things are already turning around. Yeah. It's got that like, kind of like, that kind of like Running
Man
beat
little...
behind it.
Is that like a palm muted guitar in the background? Is that a synthesizer? I don't know what that little.
I think that's a desk bell that they're muting with their hand.
Oh, yeah, of course. Classic.
Huh?
Sure.
We got to get to it. Come on.
This is honestly the most worshipful music you could ever. Again, the kids who were raised Christian can, in the particular brand of Christianity I was in, can appreciate this. This could have been released as a worship song.
I could see that. Okay, maybe I take your point a little bit. You know, I like this
song. I'm not
saying
it's bad.
Yeah.
By the way, I'm not saying it's bad.
I just don't like the fact that it's about getting a girl pregnant. Isn't that what your mom says about a Rolling Stones song? Am I getting that wrong?
Yeah.
You just told
No, Satisfaction.
That. Yeah.
Satisfaction. My mom, I had to play it for her to prove to her that it does not have a line in it about getting a girl pregnant, which was at the crux of my mom's issue with that song was, he says, I can't even get a girl pregnant. And I'm like, Mom, I don't think that's in the song.
What a weird thing to want to sing about. And I can't even get a girl pregnant.
I know.
What's wrong with me?
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right, our top story today. I'm already pre-gretting us trying to get into this, Andrew, because a couple of dudes talking about this game. There's no way we're not going to step in it. But it also did, I mean, honestly, it's the kind of thing that if I saw this and you and I were just like, you know, driving somewhere together, I would be tempted to discuss it with you. So if that's the standard for what makes it onto this show, I guess it meets that standard. There's a new version of Monopoly that is going to be released. I think actually they're taking pre-orders as of today, called Ms. Monopoly. It is billed as the first game where women make more than men. Ms. Monopoly is she has inherited the fortune or the game, I guess, from whatever the I don't know what the name of the Monopoly guy is. I assume it's P.T. Moneybags or something.
I think in the article it just referred to him as Mr. Monopoly, I think. But I'll go with P.T. Moneybags.
P.T.O. Moneybags?
Yeah.
Remember, the customer is always hungrier than they think. But she's inherited the game or the fortune or the whatever from, I think that's like her uncle or something. Ms. Monopoly wears a blazer, holds a coffee. In her world, I'm, by the way, reading from Katie Mettler in the Washington Post, writing about this. In her world, the experiences of women and their broad contribution to society form the basis of the board game. They try to sort of, I guess you could say, account for the pay gap by paying female players $1,500. $1,900 for female players, and male players get $1,500 when they pass go. All right, I'm sorry, I'm getting this a little bit wrong. They start the game with the women start the game with $1,900. Men start the game with $1,500, and then when the players pass go, the female players. Am I using female and woman right here in this context, Andrew? And I'm not even actually.
Yeah, I think
joking.
So. Like, yeah, like if okay. you're describing something, you're describing a player okay. as being either male or female. Right. Yeah.
This is one of those things where, of course, the idea of talking about and trying to champion the idea of equal pay is a big deal and important thing in our society. It's I get a little bit uncomfortable around the idea that this is so clearly, I think, an attempt by Mattel, or Hasbro rather, to be woke. I don't know. I mean, this seems to me to be a pretty clear example of woke washing. I didn't make up that word, by the way.
Oh, is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I mean, I know what it means. I thought you were just spoofing. Yeah, no. It seems like I was reading this article and, like, you know me, like, I want to, as much as possible, be, you know, cognizant. Like you said, there were a couple of middle-aged dudes talking about this. I want to be as thoughtful as, you know, as thoughtful as you should be when talking about something like this. But it's also, it's just such a naked attempt at clinging to a movement or a zeitgeist and trying to make money off of it. The idea of this is all over the place. Now, I don't think you mentioned that, you know, part of it is also like instead of buying properties, you're investing in inventions that were invented by women. So, you know, the Hasbro people, it's not even Hasbro, is it? Am I getting the company? Is it Hasbro?
No, you got it right. Okay, I was wrong. I said Mattel, but it's actually okay. Hasbro.
The Hasbro people are, trying to say, hey, listen, this is a way to learn about some of the contributions that women have offered to society. I mean, the idea of spin-off Monopoly games is not new. There's one for almost every city in America. I'm sure that's more of a franchising kind of thing. And
there's a socialism one.
Yeah, that's part of this new thing. So there's Monopoly socialism and Monopoly. There's three new ones. And these are just like...
You know what's weird, by the way? The Monopoly socialism, like there's a little GIF, I guess you could say, that's playing on the Washington Post website. One of the people playing Monopoly socialism is somebody I used to work with. It's Madalika Sika, who is an editor at NPR.
Oh, really?
I don't know why
she's in this clip playing Monopoly
socialism.
She's one with
the
glasses?
One placing the game. Yeah, placing the game piece down. Just small world. Anyway.
Anyway, I was just going to say that, like... You know, if you want to create a game where it's kind of like, hey, it's basically the Monopoly structure, but it focuses on the contributions of women, and it's just a way of kind of teaching kids while they're playing a game, just teaching them something, that's fine. But for me, this idea of, oh, but we're going to, you know, flip the paradigm and give the girls more money when they start the game than the boys, like, that doesn't achieve anything. It's not... It just doesn't make sense to me. The only reason you're doing that is to create a fuss so that people will talk about this on social media and on talk shows. And again, that's not me trying to undermine the fact that we're talking about it, but that part just doesn't seem to fit in with anything other than them wanting attention for this, even if some of that attention is kind of backlash.
Right. The senior director of global brand strategy and marketing for Hasbro. A woman named Jen Boswinkel. The quote from her to me felt like a little, I don't know, it was telling. Quote, with all of the things surrounding female empowerment, it felt right to bring this to Monopoly in a fresh new way. It's like, with all the things surrounding female empowerment, that doesn't seem to be like a super strong statement for equality, more just like, you know, we studied it. And with all the buzz around female empowerment, we thought it was time to really make some money off of that idea. I mean, would it be better to have the female players get less money So it's a more realistic representation of how the world is. And then I don't know what, like, I don't know what you do with that. But if you want to really draw attention to it, like, well, I'm with you. I don't think that giving the players in this game more money is really, it doesn't logically hold up. It's just a, seems like it's just kind of like a PR move. Now, on the other hand, I can also see a lot of people buying this Monopoly game for their daughters because they want their daughters to sort of understand, or they're hoping their daughters will feel empowered in the world and like that they don't need to be second class citizens. And of course, that's a very good sentiment. So I have a feeling this thing's going to sell like crazy and probably not even get played that much, but it's going to be on a lot of shelves in America aspirationally for a lot of families.
Yeah, maybe. I'm just really, the thing is, I was about to say I'm confused, but of course I'm confused because this doesn't make any sense. I think my mistake is trying to make sense of it because, like, it is, who is the audience? Is this for kids? And if it's for kids, then you're setting the game up in this way to teach something, right? And again, if part of that is
it's
teaching
for
about
parents to buy their daughters to say, "Look at this badass hashtag," you know, Lily Ledbetter. I mean, that, I honestly think it's like for it's for parents to buy and then Instagram their children opening it up. And then if you're extra woke, it's to buy and have your son open up on Christmas Day. I mean, it feels so kind of symbolic to me.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the reality of it. And me just I'm trying to play devil's advocate and saying, OK, let's say that that's not it, that there is a higher purpose here. Well, then what is it? And how does giving the girls or the female players more money drive home a message? It just doesn't make sense. And what it makes sense is they can put on the front of the box the first game where women make more than men. But aside from the marketing thing, like, that's not, this isn't a good way to, I mean, boys need to learn about inequality too, right? I mean, that's very important. We need to teach our sons. I don't have any sons. We need to teach our cats.
That you know of.
You know, boys need to grow up learning about inequality too so that they can be part of the solution as well. But like this idea that like, and so to learn that, we're going to give Billy less money than his sister Jilly. People name their kids crazy things. They're twins too. It's very confusing.
Billy and Jilly.
I mean, and this is like even, you know, you, just the idea of this. Is this even the way that we even really talk about gender in 2019? I'm not even sure.
Well, that's
sure.
The thing. That's what I was asking you. If I was using female and woman right, because I mean that's an added complexity to this. What about a person who's born physically male but they identify as female? What are they? What happens when they pass go?
Or don't I
what
identify?
What happens when they visit the community chest? Or gender non-binary?
Yeah, just like you know, it's just so clunky, you know, and just like I say, just a naked attempt to make money off of the zeitgeist, and just in such a left-handed way. Sorry, left-handers. Ooh, I did it. I offended left-handers.
How did you? That was the last group of people that were still on our team.
I know. It's not even the, I don't even know what was I thinking? Two left feet? What the hell was I? I'm out here trying. That's the important thing.
Don't focus
on what he's saying. Just focus on the fact that
he's saying anything. That's right. You miss all of the shots you don't take, Andrew.
But I also miss all of the shots I do take. So why try? Like that's the t-shirt that I want.
That's your Instagram. That's your rise and grind. You miss all of the shots you do take.
Yes.
Are you saying I should not have pre-ordered this as your Christmas present?
I like the way I'll team up with your mom. She'll have her YOLO Yodo shirts. I'll have you miss all the shots you do take. So why try? That seems like a very Garfield kind of poster too, doesn't it?
Now I'm just imagining like, I wouldn't want to like set her up this way with the listeners, but like I would die to get my mom's take on this game.
What do you think would be her take?
I think she would go, huh?
Yeah. Like she would just well, like, to be fair, that's what I'm doing. So
yes, but she would get to the same answer, but for a different reason. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. My mom never ceases to delight me because I honestly do not know what I'll do. I'll text my mom at some point and just ask. I'll ask her about this, and then if she gets back to me on it, I'll read that response tomorrow or whenever it is she gets back to me. Because I genuinely never know what my mom's going to say about something.
Yeah, this one, I mean, I don't know if you feel like you have a certain amount of times you can kind of you know, get her to weigh in on something like this. This one, I feel like it's almost a little unfair because it's just like, right. Is there a good answer? Like, I don't like my reaction to this. Like, right. I just think that making anybody react to this is a little bit putting you on the back foot. Two left feet.
I agree.
Left-handed.
I agree. I don't like your take either. No, you're right. I started by saying I regret bringing the topic up because there's no good take on it. Because, of course, nobody should ever say, like, let's not promote the idea of equal pay. So I don't think that this – you know what? I think maybe here's what I'll say. And I'll take the heat off of you, Andrew, and I'll put it squarely on myself. I am going to say that I think, at least in this moment, as I'm just kind of riffing and extemporating, I think that this is actually not good. I was going to say, like, there's no downside, but I think it's not good because I think it's the kind of symbolic thing that maybe could lead someone to believe they're really doing something about the problem, but they're not. And so maybe you buy this game for your niece and you give it to her. And I guess symbolically it's a nice thing, but you might be better off donating that money to a cause that actually works for equality or doing something that's more time consuming and real world based that actually helps fix this awful, intractable problem. So like it's this kind of thing where it's like you can probably go on Amazon, you can probably pre-order this game and you can give it to someone and it might create this feeling of like you're really doing something, but there's probably something that would be more useful that you could be doing. So to the degree that this takes up that space in someone's life, that's probably a bad thing.
And since I kind of inadvertently attacked left-handers today, here's my vow. I am going to create a monopoly that is for left-handed people and empowers left-handed people. And like all of the investments will be into, you know, inventions by things that left-handed people have contributed to society. Yeah. I'm going to create...
Like Lefty Frizzell, he invented guitar music.
There you go. Should I make the board go around differently? Should I make it go counterclockwise?
I can't believe they don't have a left-handed Monopoly version.
I looked that up. I Googled it before I said that, actually, because I figured there must be one already.
It's funny because I'm just looking at the cover of the game. And, of course, here's the other – this is the last layer to this whole thing. And this happens so often on this show. We are playing exactly into their hands.
Oh, yeah,
even if we're kind of slightly negging this game exists to get lame podcasts like ours and lame radio shows and Wake Up Tucson local TV. This exists to get people in the media talking about it. That is the reason that you launch something like this, because then you hope that enough people hear about it that you sell a few copies of it. And we're doing that exact thing. But like, I even noticed that it's like, this is called Hasbro Gaming, which I thought was interesting. If you look in the bottom right corner of the Ms. Monopoly box, the physical box, it says Hasbro Gaming, which it's like, is this, I mean, it is, I guess you're playing a game, you are gaming. But I guess my thought there was, I wonder, like, Hasbro's probably finds it to be such an uphill battle at this point to sell a physical thing, a thing that you physically like set up on the table and move little characters around or little figures around with, because of how digital our world is and how much gaming is now, you know, on computers and TVs and stuff. So that's also part of it. I mean, they're probably trying to do anything in their power to convince someone to buy some physical box of something and then use it.
Yeah, I didn't notice that, but that must just be a branding thing that they've done for all of their games and
right.
I don't know about toys, but I'm on the Hasbro Gaming website now, and it's just like they've just changed their language to kind of I don't know, react to how people think about games now. I mean, because there's nothing like we think of gaming as being we think of gaming as being online, right? You don't think of like LARPing as gaming necessarily, or at least traditionally you didn't. But here it is under Hasbro Gaming, you can buy Scrabble. I don't think a lot of Scrabble heads like my partner Genevieve would consider herself a gamer.
Right, exactly.
You play to win the game.
And I'm sure that somebody at Hasbro was like, we got to call it all gaming, and hopefully some people will just get confused and buy this box thinking there's a video game inside. Like, it's definitely reverse engineering it. So gaming is very popular now. And we're now going to start calling physical brick and mortar games gaming, in the hopes that we will convince people who do most of their game playing online or through computer stuff or phone stuff. We're going to hope that those people will find this more appealing because it's a word they're familiar with, which is gaming.
Speaking of gaming, though, I'm looking at a lot of these gamings they have on their website, and man, it makes me want to play. They have Sorry. Did you ever play? You're going to hear my Ohio accent in that word, too, right? Sorry. Sorry. I love that game.
Yeah. You know what I was really into was Trouble.
I'm looking at that. I mean, they have that.
Getting
gaming.
Into it and also playing the game because of the Pop-O-Matic feature. Mm-hmm. And of course, the jingle. You remember the jingle.
The Pop-O-Matic bubble. Trouble, Pop-O-Matic bubble.
Pop-O-Matic. It's a game called Trouble. Every time you pop the bubble, you get in and out of trouble. Pop-O-Matic.
Let me see if I can
Was that a Utica thing?
I don't know if I remember. Let me see. This is probably going to be too old.
Have you got trouble? Wait, don't run. This kind of trouble is lots of fun. Pop-O-Matic pops the dice, pops the six, and you move twice. Race your men around the track and try to send the others back. That's Pop-O-Matic trouble. The game is fun for dad and mother, and sis can trouble her mean old brother. Trouble, trouble, that's the name of Koner's Pop-O-Matic game. The most exciting chase game that makes trouble fun for everyone.
I know that's too early compared to the one you're talking about.
That was striking a blow for gender equality. Sis can trouble her mean old brother.
That's true. Getting back in her mean brother. I like the actual. Huh. How can I say this? Like the physicality of this game. Like I kind of forgot that. Yeah. Like it's not just pieces on a board, right? It was much more. They were like toys, like these plastic pegs that fit into these holes. Like there was something kind of just cool. Like tactile is the word I'm looking for about that game. Yeah.
Yes, there was a very tactile sense to it, the pop-o-matic-ing of it all. So I liked Trouble a lot. I did play Sorry, but I couldn't tell you the rules to Sorry off the top of my head. I also loved, when I was a little kid, I loved Chutes and Ladders.
Yes, I did.
And as I've often said, I think that Chutes and Ladders really, that may have been the very early green shoots of my love of gambling.
I'm trying to think, though. Is there a gambling aspect to it? I thought you just rolled dice.
There isn't, but I mean, well, you know, if you're hanging out with the right crew, you can put some money. Yeah. You can lay some heavy bets on it. But no, because Chutes and Ladders, there's a ladder that takes you all the way to the top, but you've got to be at the bottom. Like, so there's two ways to make your way up to the top of Chutes and Ladders. One is to just kind of like in a slow and purposeful way, keep getting small ladders and working your way up. And then the other is you hit a giant – you might get all the way up there and hit a giant chute and slide all the way down to the bottom. But you also could still shoot the moon and hit the ladder. I know I'm confusing and mixing a lot of terminology. But I remember being a little kid and like my sister or somebody would be like beating me at Chutes and Ladders. But I was like, but I still might hit that big ladder. Mm-hmm. That big ladder that goes like all – like from the almost the very bottom of the game to the top. And I was like, just get me the – Papa needs a new pair of shoes. Get me that ladder. And like I remember my brain just really fixating on this huge side bet of the big ladder.
The thing that sticks with me from the game, and I might be factually inaccurate about this, but this is my memory of it, is the really long slide all the way down that you want to avoid. There's little stories behind each one, right? In that one, you eat too much, like, cookies and cake, and then you slide all the way down, and then at the very bottom, you see a picture of a little girl, and her stomach hurts really bad. No?
I wonder if that was... Either I was just ignoring that component of the game, which I probably was, or I wonder if that was a different edition or something. I wonder if that was a more narrative version of it. But man, I was that kid who was always like, my Aunt Alice and Uncle Tom had Chutes and Ladders, and I'd go to their house and I'd be like, somebody play Chutes and Ladders with me. I was like, wandering around with the game, like, somebody play this game with me.
Yes, I'm looking for it now. I probably had an early 80s, maybe even late 70s version of it, and I might be making it more explicit than it actually is. I think it's just illustrated with little drawings. You know, it's not like whole long stories. It's not choose your own adventure style. It's just little illustrations. And I think at the end of the long slide, there was a little girl who, like, at the top of the slide, there was a bunch of cake and cookies. And at the bottom of the slide, my memory is there's a little picture of a girl holding her tummy. I'm going to see if I can find a picture of this and send it to you.
Like, I'm looking at it up now. By the way, I don't disagree with you at all. I think I probably just was not that... I was not a careful, observer of the game board. But the problem now is I just did a Google image search, and everything is new and has kids that are totally extreme and in your face. Cowabunga, dude. Like, I want some old, I need some old school 80s Chutes and Ladders, not whatever this Hey Arnold bull roar is that I'm looking at.
I think I found the board. I don't want to dig too deep while we're on the air here, but I'll see. And I want to make this maybe a show pick today because I think, this is definitely the version I had. I forgot because the game pieces were little cardboard cutouts of children that you would assemble them. You'd slip them into plastic little bases that would go around. I forgot about that.
I'm looking at some OG one. You're totally right. The 1956 Chutes and Ladders on eBay. Can I just mention really quickly, this reminds me of something that I don't know if this is going to come up on after these messages, your awesome podcast about advertising that you and Genevieve co-host. I saw a commercial last night during the football game for eBay that made me so mad. I don't know why. I don't know if you've seen this commercial. It's basically, the premise is people are shopping in stores and they're seeing things that are a certain price, and then they're using their phone to find the same item on eBay, and they're cracking up at how much they're saving.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I have.
Have you seen this commercial?
I saw it. I think I saw it out of the corner of my eye. It's not one that I watched a bunch of times. There are a couple that I've seen a bunch of times that I wanted to talk to you about. But this one, I noticed it because, I mean, it's a direct shot at something that, you know, has been something that retail stores have been worried about for a long time, right? Which is exactly that. People just using them as a showroom and then buying it cheaper online.
Well, yeah. And even like, you know, I had a couple problems with it. One was the difference between buying a bicycle in a sporting goods store and buying a bicycle on eBay is you don't know. I mean, you're told what condition the bike is in, but first of all, there's shipping. Because one of the things is literally, I believe, a bicycle. One of them is a dress. I kind of think that there's actually a slight issue, which is in one case, things are being presented, I believe, as like the new version of something. And in the other case, you're buying the used version, which is actually great. You know, let's all, you know, consume as little as possible, etc. But my bigger problem is I don't find it to be a pleasant sound to watch people maniacally laughing for 30 seconds because it's so not – it's not real laughter. It's actors pretending to be so cracked up. And all I can imagine is the 7 to 8 hours they were at this location with the director taking them through different levels of laughter. And it's also just kind of – I mean, there's a reason why the bad guys on – in you know, cartoons and in certain movies, why they laugh maniacally. There's something unsettling about the sound of people laughing, an over-the-top laughter happening sort of out of context. Like, you know, this guy gets his head cranked during Monday Night Football in his neck, and they're carting him off the field, and they go to commercial break, and it's people maniacally laughing because they're buying a dress for less. I was just kind of like, this tonally is not, I do not have a good association with eBay based on watching this commercial.
Now, have you seen the, sorry everybody, we're just going to talk about commercials for a second. Have you seen the one that I told you about off air a couple of days ago and you hadn't seen it at that point? Have you seen it during any of the games? It's for Amazon and it's about, apparently the story is, it's kind of slowly revealed, but apparently the story is about a dad who, on a whim, bought his children band equipment so that they could start a band and wake up their mom, and then he's in the other room listening to noise-canceling headphones.
I have not seen it, but you told me about it, and I'm mad about it.
It's irritating. Because, first of all, it's like it's that weird I don't even know how you describe this kind of, you know, it's not animation, but it's like everything is frozen in time, like Matrix style. And at first we see like a mom character looking like she just woke up and she can't understand what's going on in her son's room. And the camera kind of moves and we see it says band practice and a homemade sign on the in the kid's door. And then it pushes through. And again, everything is kind of frozen in time, but three-dimensional, right? And then we see like one kid is playing drums and another kid is rocking out with an electric guitar and he's jumping on the bed and he's got a spiky hair because he's a rock and roll kid now. And it says like drums, same day delivery. And then it's like hair gel for the kid's hair, same day delivery. And then like then you realize, oh, I guess the mom didn't know that this was all happening. And then the camera goes downstairs and we see the dad sitting on the couch just happily listening to something on his noise-canceling headphones, and it says, noise-canceling headphones, same-day delivery. See, you can get your kid's shit at the last minute, and you don't have to be bothered. Here's everything wrong with that commercial. Number one, same-day delivery. You just bought your kid's drums on same-day delivery, apparently without talking to your spouse about it. And also, is she working the night shift? Like, is it same morning delivery? How late is she sleeping? Which is no judgment. I sleep late all the time. But, like, it seems like same-day delivery would imply that you can maybe order it in the morning and get it later on in the day. Maybe she's working the night shift. I'll write that into the script. Sure. She works the night shift, so she needs to sleep during the day. The dad decides to buy drums, guitar, and hair gel for same-day delivery for the kids, and he's not going to be bothered because he has noise-canceling headphones. And this is where things get real, Luke Burbanky. That's not how noise-canceling headphones work. Just technology. Logically, that's the last galling thing. I think the caffeine just kicked in. Can we start the show over? I feel alive for the first time in my life. That's not how noise-canceling headphones work. Like, drum beats specifically are not going to be blocked out by offering, like, opposite sine waves. That's still going to cut through the noise-canceling technology.
Right. Yeah, I complain about that all the time, that... And it's always happening in commercials where they're always acting like noise canceling means blocks out the cacophony of life. And it's like, of course it doesn't. It blocks out the repetitive droning sounds that are regular and do not vary in their kind of, you know, sonic pattern. Real quick, I actually found the original board that I remember playing, which was like a 1978 edition, Andrew. I found it on the aforementioned eBay. And you're totally right. I don't know how I played this game so much in my life. This is some kind of view into my, like, I don't know, myopic way of looking at the world. I don't think I ever actually figured out that these kids in these squares are either being rewarded or punished for what they've done. I literally never put that together. I was just like, we got some ladders, we got some chutes.
Let's get rolling.
Let's get those ladders. Let's make that bread. It was never like, oh, you know what? You got a kitten. You got to spot 28, and you rescued a kitty out of a tree. And so now you go all the way up to spot 84 because you and the kitty are friends. But if you're a bad kid on 87 and you're trying to get in that cookie jar, you end up on 24 with stars in your eyes and a broken cookie jar because you were up on a high shelf trying to get cookies.
So this is yours. I'm following along here on a photo that I found. I can't find any great photos of it, but yours is they're yellow and white checkered squares, I take
yep.
it. And a bunch of the
spot one is a little girl with like a sun hat on planting a flower.
Uh-huh. And then she's about to go to
38.
Yep. So here's my question for you, though, because mine is very tiny. Do you see anybody who looks like they ate too many sweets? Because I'm pretty sure this is the board I had, and I might have been making that part up.
Well, no, I think you may have slightly conflated. No, there's a little girl on 49. She's eating chocolates, and she has to slide down to 11 because she's got a tummy ache.
There it is. Hey! Points
we
for
got
me.
There.
I'm already winning this game of chutes and ladders somehow.
This is the podcast where Andrew and I play a game of chutes and ladders on air.
Oh, God. Could that be a podcast? There are chess podcasts, right? There are D&D podcasts. What if you and I, we don't have enough side projects. What if we created a weekly podcast where we play one game of chutes and ladders and just talk it through?
It couldn't be worse than some of the things that we have actually released as episodes of this show.
Absolutely.
This one possibly being on that list.
I was thinking
let's put a cherry on that fine Sunday of a show by talking sports, particularly Philadelphia sports, which I know a limited amount about and which listeners have a limited interest in. I just thought you might get a kick out of this story, Andrew. I found this on Deadspin. Dan McQuaid is a funny writer at Deadspin who I really like. I actually found it because David Roth tweeted about it. But anyway, there's a guy that plays for the Philadelphia 76ers basketball team. His name's Mike Scott. He's kind of a local legend. Even though he doesn't play a ton of minutes, there was a video of him, which I found so charming, where he was diving to save a ball, and he went into the fans courtside, as often happens now because people are pressed right up on the court in basketball. And he accidentally kind of, you know, he didn't like, you know, knock anyone out, but he kind of went into these fans, and then he took one of the fans was holding like a cocktail. like a plastic cup with a mixed drink in it. And he took a sip of the mixed drink, gave it back, and went back into the game, which is just a power move. You got to love it. Like, I always feel like I would have loved to have, for so many reasons, I would have loved to have been a pro athlete, but mostly because I would have totally, hopefully, been that guy. Like, you have this, like, when players go into the stands and they do funny things, it always cracks me up, particularly in basketball, because, again, of the proximity. There's no walls separating the front, very front courtside seats and the guys playing basketball. So I would have been that person who was like, or you know what I really would, I would hope I would do is if I really crashed into some people, I would apologize to them, like, or I would check on them, like, hey, are you okay? Mm-hmm. Even if it meant I couldn't get back on defense. Like, I just think, I don't know why, that's an interaction I would like to have as a pro athlete, would be that moment. And he did one better, which is actually had a drink of their, like, gin and tonic before he ran back into the game. So he's kind of beloved in Philly. There's, as Dan McQuaid is writing about in Deadspin, I get, and I didn't know this, honestly, Philadelphia has this kind of history, or this thing of, like, getting obsessed with, and this is not unique to Philly, actually, but they have that tradition of where fans will get obsessed with a particular player, usually like a backup player. Like, in when the Sonics were still a basketball team, there was a guy named Steve Scheffler who was not very good. I believe he was he had played basketball in the Midwest. I want to maybe say Purdue. He was just a big kind of lummox of a guy who would get in the game when it was a blowout. And there was, like, he had the biggest rooting section for the Sonics. I think they were called, like, the Chef's Crew, and people would dress in, like, chef's outfits and go crazy when Steve Scheffler would finally get in at the end of the game. So Mike Scott's not quite that bad, but he's one of those guys that the Philly fans really rally around, even though he doesn't play a ton of minutes. So he is originally from D.C., or at least is a big R-Words fan. So the Eagles are playing the R-Words. It's in Philadelphia. And this guy, Mike Scott, is supposed to go eventually be on a local sports podcast called Fourth and Yawn. I don't understand that reference. Probably some Philly listeners understand, and they'll fill me in on what that means. But he's on his way to Fourth and Yawn, and he walks past a group of, let's just presume, because, again, I know I come from Philly people, just drunk Eagles fans. So this group of drunk Eagles fans, now to get this, Andrew, they have brought a casket to their tailgating party in representation of one of the people who passed away's grandfather. I do not believe the grandfather was in the casket. Maybe his ashes were, but he happens to walk by a group of people who actually have brought effectively a dead person to the tailgating because he wanted to tailgate one final time. That's just an unrelated tableau that is unfolding behind Mike Scott in his R-Words jersey trying to walk to his appearance on this sports podcast, right?
Yeah. Now, can I ask a quick question here? Because this is where the story got confusing to me. But there's a jersey resting on top of this casket, and it is not an Eagles jersey, right? It's another red jersey. Is it an R-Words jersey? Is that who this grandfather was a fan of? And why would Eagles fans have brought that?
This is going to get really confusing. Okay. But basically, what they decided to make a joke out of the casket and have it be a funeral for the last time the R-Words were, like, in the playoffs or went to the Super Bowl or whatever.
Oh,
so there's an R-Words thing on it, but it's basically making fun of the Washington football team by basically saying, like, hey, this is also a funeral or this is in memory, like, of the last time you guys were relevant at football.
Okay.
Now, where it gets confusing is that there was also an R-Words player named Sean Taylor who died during a home invasion in Florida, a very awful situation. And a rumor got started on the internet that thing you're seeing draped over the casket was a Sean Taylor jersey, and therefore being these Philly fans are making fun of the death of a Washington player. That was not what was actually happening, but that was one of the things that there's a whole bunch of weird internet rumors around this. Anyway, this guy, Mike Scott, is walking past this group of players or group of fans. Now, let me again remind you, he plays for their basketball team. If it were basketball season, they would be at home watching him play for their home team. They would be going crazy and supporting him. But because he is out of context for them and because he's wearing a Washington jersey and hat, they see him as the enemy. They do not recognize him as their own local basketball player. And all of a sudden, words are exchanged and a bunch of these rowdy Eagles fans jump their own city's basketball player, and a kind of melee ensues. I feel like I've already stepped into it enough with the Ms. Monopoly thing, but let me just say it's probably not a factor that Mike Scott is African-American and that these fans that I could see on the video that were jumping him are mostly white folks. Let's just say Philadelphia does not have a great history in terms of white people in particular not being racist. And I feel like this is something I can say firsthand, having observed it firsthand within my own family at times. So there's some weird dynamics going on here. But again, the idea that they're jumping on and fighting with, and by the way, Mike Scott was fine. Everybody who got, I don't think there were any charges. I don't think anyone got really hurt. It was just this kind of weird melee thing that happened. That also predictably happens anytime there's an Eagles home game. There will always be fights. It's part of the deal because everyone gets too drunk and they don't have good coping skills when they feel triggered. So the part of this that was funny to me, though, was that the guy who hosts the sports podcast that this Mike Scott guy was on the way to, Mike Scott never got to the sports podcast because he got attacked by Eagles fans. The guy who hosts that sports podcast then went and got in his car and set up his camera to release a video about what had happened. And this is just funny to me because it's the most Philly guy talking about the most Philly thing that could ever happen. Take a listen to this.
What's up, guys? So I just wanted to take a real quick moment to address what happened with Mike Scott in the parking lots yesterday. I was going to wait until the 4th and John show, but I needed to get this off my chest because I've seen way too much on social media, people tweeting at 4th and John, and also local radio hosts who claim to be the voice of the fans in this market saying, well, that's what you get when you wear a Redskins jersey at an Eagles tailgate. Bull. All Mike Scott is doing is staying true to his hometown. That's it. And there's nothing wrong with that. And he plays for the Sixers. You assholes. You're trying to fight a guy who's playing for the Philadelphia 76ers. A guy who is a social media all-star and a fan favorite despite not being a star and coming off the bench. Because what? Because he takes time with the fans. He's out there. My man Karate Mark, he's showing up to his karate studio to have a Nerf fight with his kids, with his students.
What? Yeah. Didn't think this was going to end up referencing Karate Mark.
What is going on with Karate? Also, it's 4th and John. I thought you said Yawn with a Y. What is... Okay.
Well, it's J-A-W-N.
Okay.
4th and John. But I don't know if that's just maybe that's just a play on how people in Philly say John. 4th and John.
Okay.
But like, apparently Karate Mark is a long-standing character in Philly to the point where Dan McQuaid, the guy writing about this for Deadspin, who's just watching this video, Dan McQuaid is from Philly. I think he from Philly or from Jersey, but anyway, it's all kind of the same place, depending on the part of Jersey you're talking about. Dan McQuaid is watching this video, the guy that wrote this for Deadspin, and he goes, when I saw the video, I immediately had one thought. I've heard of Karate Mark. Is this Karate Mark the same guy who taught karate since I was a kid? Or does Philadelphia have two Karate Marks? I reached out to a man named Classic Jeff, and he confirmed it for me. There is only one Karate Mark.
Awesome. I love it.
So I guess that Mike Scott, the basketball player, he'll go to Karate Mark's classes and have Nerf gun fights with Karate Mark's students. This is according
great.
To Classic Jeff. And so...
Why? Because he takes time with the fans. He's out there. My man Karate Mark, he's showing up to his karate studio to have a Nerf fight with his kids, with his students. He does good stuff like that. And you're trying to fist fight him? Why? Because he's wearing a Redskins jersey? You assholes. So congratulations, dummies. Not only is it a bad look for the team, the city, and the fans, but now the 76ers are probably going to tell Mike Scott.
By the way, congratulations, dummies. I know
yes.
We do a Hey Dummies video.
Uh-huh.
Congratulations, dummies. Is the most, if you grew up with the Philadelphia family that I have, the kind of people, that's probably in the top five sentiments that are expressed.
Yeah.
Congratulations, dummies. Like when someone's ruined something, I don't mean specifically my cousins say that,
right.
But that is a sentiment. It's like, great job. You screwed this up. Congratulations, dummies. There's a lot of that ball busting and frustration being expressed.
The team, the city, and the fans. But now the 76ers are probably going to tell Mike Scott that he should tone down the mingling with the fans. Good job. And I want to make it 100% crystal clear that that was not my tailgate, all right? And I want to apologize to the people who did show up to my tailgate thinking that they might have an opportunity to meet Mike Scott or take a picture with him or see him do a beer bong baptism. I'm sorry that didn't happen.
Hey, slow down, John. Can we talk about that for a second?
Yeah, this is, again, that's the most, like, that is another very Philly thing, which would be, and I don't actually know what a beer bong baptism is, but the idea that it would be like, people were excited for him to come out and sign, you know, their kid's basketball jersey and meet with some elderly people and do a beer bong baptism. It's like the overlap of, like, very, like, respectable, nice, civic things. And then also, because it's Philly, there will be something called a beer bong baptism. It will probably involve Yingling.
Yeah. And, like, and think about this, though. I mean, not to make this too serious, but on a more serious note, think about all the people who won't go to beer bong heaven now because they weren't beer bong baptized. And, like, that is that is sad.
No,
that
actually breaks your
real
heart.
Implications. Yeah.
Beer bong baptism. I know that's a lot of B's, dude. So, anyway, that's the...
I want to apologize to the people who did show up to my tailgate thinking that they might have an opportunity to meet Mike Scott or take a picture with him or see him do a beer bong baptism. I'm sorry that didn't happen because some on the other side of the parking lot still think it's 1993 and the 700 level is still cool.
I don't know what the 700 level is a reference to, but again, I'm sure some of our Philly listeners will clue me in. I got to get a clue here.
I like the energy there, though. That guy has what I did not start the show with today, certainly.
He's got that, like, he's kind of got that that sports radio energy. That, you know, I like it in small doses. That was a dose that I enjoyed.
Yeah, that was a good dose. I could see it maybe, you know,
wearing a little thin.
Sure, sure. Just like my Rizzo.
Oh, yeah. Do you listen to that guy anymore?
No, you know, they put all of that stuff behind a paywall now. Like all that Cleveland, what is it? It's called, like, it's got the worst name, too. The Believe, is it something related to Believe Land? I don't know. It's terrible, but you got to pay for it.
Right.
Oh, it's called the Land on Demand now. Because Believe Land, which, boy, nobody thought that was going to go away real fast, right? People still going around saying Believe Land. By the way,
sure. Is that a thing? That's what I hear from all of my Believe Land homies.
Yeah.
I won't bore people with another Lebatard pitch. But if you are a sports enthusiast and you are looking for something that both involves sports but is like the right amount of energy, but not the Believe Land, and also is like usually I think on the right side of the social aspects of sports. Would recommend the old Lebatard show, but only after you've eaten all of your TBTL. Lebatard is the dessert, but you need to finish your TBTL first, okay?
All right, I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now, but have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to TBTL.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
Here I go once again with the email. Every week, I hope that it's from a female. Oh, man, it's not from a female.
Any emails or V-mails that are of interest to you today, my friend?
Yes, but I'm a little nervous about it.
Uh-oh.
I did this yesterday, too. I have a piece of audio here that some tens sent in that I have not listened to first. You know me. Usually, I like to listen to everything first. I like to make sure all the levels are okay, make sure that the content is appropriate for the show. But, you know, that's no fun, right? Like, some of the most fun times you used to have on the radio was when you would put people on the air without screening them first. So that's what we're going to do here.
Right.
This is an email that I got from Roxanne that says, "Hello, Andrew," period. There's something about the way it just says, "Hello, Andrew." After hearing so much scat singing on the show, I wondered how it would sound if all of the TBTL's top scatters got together for a jam session. So I wasn't sure if this was like some sort of a, and I'm still not sure, is this some sort of a mashup of people scatting on our show? It says the file is called Scatman and Ken and Jeremy and Kim. Now notice Roxanne's name is not in this. So I have no idea. This is a bunch of listeners who maybe recorded this after the picnic. I have no idea. I've told you everything I know. Let's go.
So you've never heard this audio.
I swear
either.
To God, this is 14 seconds of audio. Again, this is Roxanne saying, "I wondered how it would sound if all of TBTL's top scatters got together for a jam session. Enjoy, Roxanne." Well, yet Roxanne's name is not on
this. Who decides who the top
one.
Scatters are?
I don't know, but let's see
who scats
see
the scat man.
That's what I want to know. Scatman's World. This is why you scan things before you play them on the show.
I did figure out what it was, though. That's Kim Cattrall.
Right.
Sped up. It says
Ken
Chris?
And Jeremy are the other two. One of them, though, is...
Oh, are those the guys from Found Footage?
Yeah, I guess so. Although I thought the yo-yo guy, is his stage name Ken when he's playing the yo-yo man?
I don't know.
Because you know the Yo-Yo Man Scatter. We've talked about this a bunch. He's the guy who's like an actor. But you can't recall his real name, right?
No.
Okay.
But those are basically... So I see. So she was taking... Those
Kenny Strauss.
Taking,
K. Strauss. That's
Kenny Strauss. Right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Okay.
Taking all of the like scat... Like the people that are like... That are the sort of the Mount Rushmore of TBTL scatting. And then just like sped them up and put them all together. I mean,
Oh, and that must be Jeremy Renner in the middle of it.
Yes, it is. See? We're figuring it out. What I'd really like to hear, though, is everybody on top of each other.
Ah, all
which will
all
make
at
the
once,
brown
yeah.
sound.
It will make the brown sound. Want me to read another email? I will, right here. Let me see here. Noisy Chickens. I remember reading this yesterday and liking it. I don't remember what it says. Gabe says, "When Luke was ruminating about neighbors and chickens last week, I realized I had a direct life experience on this. When I was a kid, we got chickens." Oh, I remember this now. "This was sort of weird since we lived in suburban Atlanta, and the backyard chicken thing was far in the future. We got two bantam chickens, a hen named Georgina." Yeah, you're in Georgia. Makes sense. "And a rooster named Paul. And they eventually laid eggs and had chicks. Paul was a real jerk and would attack anyone who came into his section of the backyard. This is scarier than it sounds, since roosters have sharp little claws and can mess you up. If we were playing baseball and we hit a ball into the part of the yard that he considered his, he would come charging out and we'd have to run because his tiny chicken was pissed. Anyway, he crowed a lot all day, and our neighbors didn't like the morning crowing. The solution was that every evening we'd go get him from the bush he slept in, take him into the basement, and put him in a cardboard box.
I've had those nights.
He was crying, staring at the tree, saying this was the tree that he played in as a kid.
"Why are you sleeping in this bush, Luke?"
Birds just Rough think night. It's night. So they take him out of the bush, they put him in the basement, and they put the chicken in a cardboard box. Birds just think it's night, and they go to sleep if it's dark. So he just slept in there, and then in the morning, we'd go get him, and we'd put him back in the yard. One morning, he did jump out of the box and peck me in the eye, but this did more or less solve our neighbor issue. That is from Gabe. That is delightful. I would like to hear more stories of Paul and Georgina."
Yeah, that's great. And let me just point out that, like, that's a good example with the chicken. And also you have, like, small dogs where people are like, "Oh, you know, it's just a tiny dog." Yeah, but if there was a rat that size and it was mad at you, it would be terrifying.
Right, yes.
Like when a small dog tries to bite your ankle, it's not like a, you know, Doberman is coming after you, but it would still really hurt. And again, if you just imagine it was a different animal, It would be so freaky if a rat the size of a chihuahua just came tearing around the corner and was going to come get you. You would never emotionally recover from that. But because it's a chihuahua, we're like, whatever, it's a little dog. Same thing with this chicken. It's like, oh, okay, you know, it's just a little small dinosaur offspring or dinosaur descendant. But yeah, if that thing's coming after you with its sharp beak and sharp talons, that's scary.
It's like the old question: would you rather fight 100 dogs the size of rats or fight a chicken named Paul? And you know what? Yep. I don't have an answer to that. Nobody does.
No, I'd go neither.
I'd go neither there. That's what I got for the emails today. I'm going to check the voicemail line later today and maybe be loaded up for tomorrow.
All right. Well, that's actually good timing because I, as is now the case on Tuesdays, have to go call into a meeting in 5 minutes. So this is very fortuitous.
What about the other Mike and the Mechanics song?
Ooh, no. Silent Running? I mean,
too dark?
Listen. Well, I mean, you'll have to make it right with the listeners if they find it. I want to say that my perception of all of this Mike and the Mechanics stuff is very much shaped by my own childhood experience. I might be the only one who gets that kind of weird, sad feeling off of their music.
Well, let me ask you this in the 2 minutes we have left. When you type Mike and the Mechanics into Spotify, by far the number one song, even over Living Years, is a song called Over My Shoulder. Do we know that?
What?
Are they just bad at naming their songs? Do we know this song here?
I've never heard. Now, I'll also mention that Mike plus the Mechanics are a British band, so maybe they had a big hit in the UK that we don't even know about.
$48 million listens on this one. $33 million on the Living Years. Only $4 million on Silent Running.
Was this released during that weird period of the 80s where legally every singer had to sound like Steve Winwood?
Mm-hmm. Flute sales went crazy that year. Yeah, this doesn't... I thought maybe it'd be one of those where... I'd like it. Let's go out with it.
Yeah, I'll take it over Silent Running, which will put me in a sad mood for the rest of the day. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We're going to be back here tomorrow with more Imaginary Radio for you.
Yeah!
Until then, enjoy your Tuesday. And please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Power out.